It is a time of legend. The galaxy is in flames. A brutal civil war endangers the Emperor's vision for humanity. His favored son, Horus, has turned from his father's light and pledged himself to dark and terrible powers. The galaxy burns. On the black sands of Istvan V, Horus' perfidy was laid bare and three loyal legions were all but destroyed. So begins the battle for the very soul of mankind. There may be no bystanders, for this is a battle for survival. Treachery and betrayal have usurped honor and nobility. The screams of the innocent and the righteous resound to the cruel laughter of dark gods. The age of knowledge and enlightenment has ended. The age of darkness has begun.
Greetings and welcome to the fifth episode of the Fires of Betrayal podcast, a podcast that is dedicated to discussing the various games set in the Age of Darkness, as well as all the lore that surrounds them. In today's podcast, I'm joined by returning guest Will, and the first time my good friend Manji. Before we get into the main topic of discussion today, I'm going to introduce my good friend Lucas, who's going to talk about his next event in the Pyrex campaign season that he's running at multiple conventions around the US.
Thank you for joining me today, Lucas. You got some news about the next Pyrex event you're running up in Kansas City, apparently?
Yeah, Martin, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to share some information about the next Pyrex event we're running. It's called the Amber Strand. It's a Pyrex incursion level event, and basically that just means that it's a regular one weekend event rather than a big convention style thing like Adepticon. It's going to be held May 26th through 28th, so Memorial Day weekend in Independence, Missouri, which is right outside Kansas City, for those of you that are not aware. It's going to have three days. It's going to have a Friday night portion, which is going to be just like drop-in, drop-out, Zomortalis gaming. Then it's going to have Saturday. It's going to have two rounds of frontline gaming, so big 3,000-point games. And then on Saturday evening, we're going to do the Zomortalis Mega Battle, which is kind of a Pyrex staple. We do that pretty much every time. That's going to be 1,500 points per player. And then on Sunday, we're going to have two rounds, an awards ceremony, and then we're going to go home.
So this is following on running from the narrative at Adepticon, right?
Absolutely. It's following the narrative from Adepticon. So we had our audio narrative from Adepticon. We had a story that was basically written and then narrated by a guy named Baldemort's Guide to Warhammer. We're planning on continuing that tradition. The narrative portion for this event has not come out yet, but it will be very soon. I'm sure you'll link my link tree in the description down below so I can update everyone whenever it comes out. Or if you guys want to join us over on Discord, that's the best way to find the updates. I'm sure that's actually linked in the link tree as well. Basically, at the end of Adepticon, we had an event happen, which we call The Weapon. And what that did is that basically removed special characters and Primarchs from our system. So we're not going to be having special characters or Primarchs anymore. And the way that we're going to replace that is we're using a new system called the Pyrex Character Forge. And basically, it's for legions only at the moment. We felt that the other factions actually have quite a lot of character in their builds, but we found that legion praetors actually don't really have usually a lot of character in their builds. Like, pretty much everybody brings either Thunderhammer or Paragon Blade or sometimes legion-specific weapon, but there's not really a whole lot else the praetor can do other than unlocking your right of war. In fact, I find that a lot of people are even eschewing the Praetor in favor of the Delegatus simply because he's cheaper. So what we've done is basically we've taken the console upgrade system and we've kind of added that to Praetors. It's not exactly like a console, but like say your Praetor used to be a member of the Librarius. You can select the Apostolary upgrade now and he can be a Battle Psyker Praetor, or say that he used to be a member of he used to be a Moritat. Like, that's how he rose to command. That's one of the options we'll let you pick for your Praetor. You can have a Praetor Moritat. So that system is coming out very, very soon, hopefully in the next week, so that people can get their characters ready for the Midwest Conquest, or for Amber Strand, which is what we're calling our portion of the event. So you'll have to, like I said, follow us on Discord to get those updates. We'll be updating it through Facebook and on the event description as well. So if you don't use Discord, you can still get them.
Fantastic. So for the folk who are listening, what's the best place for them to get involved?
So like I had said, the best way for people to kind of follow us and get updates on that is through Discord. We have a Taking of Ferrix Discord server. So that's going to be linked in our link tree down below. As far as if they want to get involved in Midwest Conquest or in the Amber Strand, tickets are live right now on Best Coast Pairings. So hopefully that link will also be in the video description or in the podcast description. Sorry. If not, it is on our link tree, like I said. And for those of you who just want to go to it, our link tree is linktr.ee/Ferrix. Tickets are $80 for the weekend. That gives you everything you need. That gives you the access to the ZM on Friday night, all day gaming on Saturday, and most of the day on Sunday. And then that also will give you a little bit of a swag bag at the event. We've got some cool stuff to put in there. So if you'd like to join us, that's the best way to do so.
Great, great. Well, thanks for joining me. I look forward to this event myself. I should be going. I've got to sort out my hotel, but otherwise I'm going to be there. Bring my word bearers. Painting some fantastic models right now for it. Thanks again.
Well, thanks for having me on, Martin, and I hope to see you guys there. It should be good. We have 30 spots available, and we sold a couple tickets so far, but we're starting to hit the advertising pretty hard, so hopefully that'll fill up. So if you want to come, get your tickets bought, and we'll see you there.
Huge thanks to Lucas for coming on talking about his great upcoming event. I'm really looking forward to attending myself, and I hope to see many of you there. Anyway, the topic of today's show itself is a discussion on how do we make the game of Horus Heresy great, and how do we improve the community itself. We're going to talk quite a bit about the reputation of the Horus Heresy community, the good and the bad. We talk a bit about recent events, the ones I've attended in Texas, and a small little one called Adeptcon that Munchie attended last month. Mostly, we're trying to focus here on constructive thoughts, how we can improve and how we can make sure our community withstands the changes that are happening to it right now. I had a really good time making this recording. This is a little longer than my normal show. I'll also quickly note that I understand my microphone through some of the podcast was detecting a hum. I wasn't able to delete the entirety of it, so bear with me. I actually don't talk a huge amount on it, and Manju and Will do the heavy lifting on the show, so huge thanks to them, and I'll see you at the end of this.
So, thank you to Will and Manju for joining me today. Before we get going, I'll sort of let you guys introduce yourselves. I will start with Will, who's been around. Will, do you want to say hello so everyone remembers your voice?
Well, hello, everybody. This is Will.
And then I was joined today by my good friend Manju from Austin. He's been playing here for a while, but I'll let him explain who he is.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Hi, everybody. If you recognize my voice, you're one of the dozens of fans of the Bell of Lost Souls Horus Heresy content, where I'm one of three hosts. I've been playing Horus Heresy since about 2020. I bought the models in 2018. It was the year after 8th edition hit. And I didn't get the courage to build them until the pandemic, and I had a bunch of time to work on very fiddly resin models. I've been playing 40K since about 3rd edition, so played a lot of those. Played pretty much 3rd through about 5th edition, and then came back to it with late 7th, early 8th. Got into Heresy 1.5 with the Red Books, and once about, I think, 9th edition 40K really sort of became a game I didn't enjoy playing. I went really hard into Heresy, and I have quite a few armies. So,
if I'm remembering right, you've got your World Eaters, Ultramarines, Raven Guard.
Yes, yeah, I've got World Eaters at about 4,000 points, Ultramarines at somewhere around 10,000 to 12,000, Raven Guard at about 3,500, I've got the workings of a Sons of Horus Pride of the Legion, where I put veterans in drop pods and kitbash the Mark VI kits with a bunch of the Chaos Legionnaire stuff, going to use them as kind of an ally detachment for my world leader.
Just being taken by the idea of running Pride of the Legion for the drop pods, and that's a really interesting build.
I mean, it's I looked at running the drop pod Rite of War, but I really don't want to get Charybdis and Dreadclaw drop pods. So I was like, what units can take the regular plastic drop pod? And that's like, veterans can take it as a dedicated transport. I'm like, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty fitting thing for Sons of Horus, especially at the siege. So I'm going to go with that for my next army this year. I've also got a small-ish knight's army. It's all the plastic armigers and knights. Sadly, my Castellan forgot its rules in between editions, so I can't run that. But I'm eyeing a castigator to get to make them much more viable in Heresy.
And you've also recently just played up at the Adepticon this past year, right?
Yes, I did head to Adepticon this year. Had some great games at the Taking of Phyrex. Had a really fun time with my buddy in the doubles event. And Adepticon Heresy is always an incredible experience. I highly recommend it, especially if you've never been. It's unlike any other games of Heresy I've played anywhere else.
With all that said, now everyone knows who everyone is. Well, we get stuck into the main topic, which, you know, what games of Heresy should be feeling like, which is quite nicely off that last comment. I think I already want to talk news for a minute. We've had a little bit of news from Games Workshop in the last couple of weeks on their weekly news articles. I think the biggest news is the fact that we're not getting any more. We had a teaser for the new book with tank information, and then a new Psyker, and they were like, that's it for now. What's your guys' feelings on that?
So here's my take on it, is it kind of is a good thing that they're ending the Heresy Thursdays. It was great that we were getting stuff out every Thursday, but clearly they don't have everything in the pipeline that we need, although that's why we're getting all these tanks and not getting all the plastic infantry we need, like, you know, the plastic breachers and the plastic assault marines. So maybe this is a good thing. It's going to give them time to get, you know, a whole bunch of stuff queued up. It's also not entirely a surprise with 10th edition coming around the corner that they're going to want to have a lot of blowing up of the 10th edition releases, so that's not too surprising that they're going to turn the hype engines into something new. I just hope that their promise that it's not over, it's just a temporary thing, is actually true.
You know, I think, you know, I agree with the sentiment. Well, I hope this isn't sort of the end of big mainline coverage. I really feel like I would have been more cool if Heresy Thursday stuck around and it wasn't just like, here's a new model, but like, show off cool, like, community armies, talk about events at Warhammer World, or show off stuff from, like, you know, the store and cafes, because they're doing their big, like, cafe bash, and that's got a Heresy component, and like, use it as a way to kind of show off Heresy as a game, not just, you know, the new units and the new models and such. But that said, I think, you know, what I'm hopeful about is that there's still quite a lot of Heresy in the pipeline, and I'm hoping that a slower cadence will mean less of that sort of weekly frustration of like, oh, it's a tank, or it's another resin upgrade, or it's half a contemptor they want to charge you $60 for. I'm hopeful that, you know, we can get maybe a slower cadence, but bigger releases tied into stuff like more exemplary battle units and opportunities to convert and make new stuff. So yeah, I'm definitely saddened that we're losing that kind of like regular weekly cadence, but I do hope it's an opportunity for them to, you know, we get Heresy articles for the next little while, because like you said, Will, 10th edition is going to suck all the air out of the room for, I think, the next 3 or 4 months. But I'm hopeful that, you know, we will still get some stuff for the Age of Darkness time.
It's been about a year. Having a year where basically every week we had new content, or at least a new model, there's a lot of previews for Games World. So I'm not surprised we're getting near the bottom of the barrel. I share all the frustrations about the missing PDFs. That said, I think a really important revelation I had in my mind the other day, I was listening to another podcast, and there were some conversations about how, you know, until we get the PDFs, we don't have the complete game. And my thought is, well, what's new there? Because I've just come 3 years of playing Titanicus, and it was middle of last year when we finally got the Possessed Titan rules that referenced way back. So the fact, you know, we're still waiting on rules is really nothing new for Games Workshop. It's just feels really unusual because apart from those missing PDFs, delivered such a complete game last summer.
I mean, I would argue, and this is maybe my like one of my hot takes for the show. You don't really need the militia rules because if you read the Solar Auxilia rules, it's way more than what Solar Ox was in first edition. You could probably do 80 or 90% of what you would do in a militia army with a Solar Auxilia now. You know, I understand we want like the Demons of the Ruinstorm, but they just gave us the Bound Demon rules. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like an army of demons never felt super fitting for the Heresy me, unless I guess you're like exclusively fighting Blood Angels.
My concern really with the Bound Demon rules is that it was just a weird selection of demons, missing a lot of core units that you expect to be there. I think it'd be a lot more palatable if we'd had a lesser demon entry in there.
That really comes down to what my issue with it is. You know, I have a full-on demon army. I had my Angrath. I got Angrath built, converted, because I used a bunch of Bloodthirster bits on him in order to get him looking more updated, because he's a fairly dated model compared to the Blastix. Got him converted, got him painted up. No sooner had I got him painted up than, oh yeah, by the way, there's not going to be any demon rules. So that was kind of frustrating. But that's really what it comes down to me is I have a demon army, a full 3K demon army. But realistically, demons as allies for that, having them as a true allied army would be great. The bound rules are actually really good. I like them. I like them as a concept. But they are so narrow that it's basically, hey, bring a couple of big, really big demons, you know, either the named ones or a lord, and then you don't really have anything to fill out an ally slot. So we're going to give you one set of units that we're already giving you as a retinue for a lord, and we'll just call them as you can use those for troops, elites, and everything else to fill out an allied slot. And that's very unfulfilling.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, Will, and I definitely do want people who have demon armies to be able to play them. I just, you know, I really do feel like demons as a whole army, rather than as like something kind of supplements another army, just do feel kind of strange in Heresy, given how limited the like actual, you know, demons as a horde kind of are in the black books and the novel.
Don't get me wrong. I think while I would love to have the option of having demon armies, it's a bit like Custodi army. The one army you see showing up in an event and you're like, we in a narrative event? Because those Custodes came out to back war en masse like a handful of times. I mean, demons were like, if we're playing Siege of Terror, sure. Plenty of demons there.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I get where you're coming from. It's just, I don't know, it's always been weird to me seeing the full demon army, though I will say, Will, like, the guys who really went all out like you've done to, like, convert and make something that's more than just, like, here's the bloodletter kit, or the, you know, the other, like, regular plastic demons. People, like, go out and do conversions and make them, like, look weird and strange and creepy. Like, those armies, I'm like, yeah, that works.
So we talked about the end of the Heresy. The actual content recently, Librarian was a weird model. I think Kyrioth summed it up greatly. It was the most whelming model I've seen in a while. It's neither underwhelming or overwhelming, it just is.
It's weird he didn't have a psychic hood.
But maybe he does. The little bits on his helmet kind of have that vibe, but...
Maybe kind of, but not really. And that's really it. As people are like, oh, psychic hoods aren't common in the Heresy. I think one of the comments, because I basically said, you know, I was underwhelmed about it. There's really nothing on there other than the book that and the paint job that makes him out to being a librarian. And somebody said, well, what's the difference between the consoles except their equipment? Well, literally their equipment. That's how you define who they are. And if he doesn't have equipment that makes him look like a librarian, he might as well just be a praetor. I think the best comment I saw somebody put up, he looks like a kitbash. He looks like you got the praetor, the box set, and kitbashed a librarian.
I don't know. I've had some very interesting conversations with folk recently coming into the Heresy who do not have access to a power-armored librarian. And there's lots of conversation about, can you make a Primaris librarian work? You scrape all the stuff off the Blood Angels one. And it's like, it's a nice kit to have.
I don't know. I would argue, like, one, Grey Knight, the back half of the Grey Knight torsos come with a psychic hood. So I am not the only person, I'm sure, that has bought Grey Knight kits for certain bits. Fun fact, if you want to do a lot of Thunderhammer Storm Shield, you really want the Grey Knight Terminator arms. They go really well on the Indomitus bodies.
Before we had the tank commanders, which was, again, a bit of a weird release. I'm excited for the book.
Oh, I'm stoked for those guys. Fun fact that I have not seen a lot of people talking about. They upgrade units, not single tanks. So the whole, like, double fire your pintles as a reaction. What about double firing multi-meltas?
I'm excited to see what the other upgrades are. There should be another one everyone can get, and one obviously for Imperial Fists, I believe.
Well, they showed the Sons of Horus guy and the Imperial Fist guy, and they have their own separate.
It's going to be interesting. I think anything we can do to actually make tanks better in the game, they are a bit of a, I don't want to say terrible, because
I would disagree. So here's the thing: some tanks are not good. Some tanks are preposterous. Anything that can take a flare shield and is armor 14 is in the probably too good category. So that's a Spartan and Kratos. Kratos especially. I mean, you know, you're reducing, most people are packing las cannons or multi-maltas as their anti-tank. Multi-maltas suddenly can't do anything to it at all. Las cannons can only glance. So, you know, that's a huge, huge deal. Things that are not armor 14 and cannot take flare shields, much less good. So, I mean, I love the Sakaaran hulls. I love the Predator. But I do feel like those are actually a fairly... There's the all las cannon Predator, but I don't know why you would take that over a heavy support squad who can reaction fire las cannons. I'm a big fan of Volkite. Maximizing, like, reactive defensive fire on tanks is a big deal. I'm an Ultramarines player, so you get to Ultramarine react with squadrons of Predators. If they're all mounting Volkite, that is a tremendous amount of shots. But, you know, I think overall, you know, we just did a video for Bell of Lost Souls talking about Armored Spearhead and kind of in general. I think they can be very, very good. I think the prevalence of things that can crack non-armor 14 vehicles really harms anything that's, like, more expensive than a Rhino.
I had this conversation earlier on one of the discords I'm in. It's, someone was complaining about fighting a 15 unit in a game yesterday. Like, I couldn't work out how to deal with it. It's like, well, just pack enough guns that you'd want to bring down a Contemptor with, and you've got a good chance of bringing it out.
I mean, yes and no. I have a unit that can one round a Contemptor Dreadnought and couldn't scratch armor 50. You need very specifically strength 10 shooting. We're talking about firing into AV, and that is not easy to come by for a Marine.
And see, my answer to this is, I'm Space Wolves. Of course, the answer is charge it with chain fists and dreadnought chain fists.
I mean, I think that melee is a very good answer. I had an opponent at the Firex event who was so depressed when he saw the tank army out. And then he found out that tactical Marines have crack grenades and all the attacks are on my rear armor. And suddenly, it's one of those things where I feel like tanks are in a weird spot. Characters that buff squadrons is a niche they haven't had yet. And I'm interested to see, like, how that will shape out. Imperial Fists getting the buff is also really interesting to me, because as Imperial Fists are in most of Heresy, fist tanks are actually quite good. And I think that could actually be a pretty big buff to, like, basic Predator squadrons, which is a thing Fists want to run already.
I had to face down a Fist Krytos last weekend, and it was, yeah, taking it out was a priority, which was saying something considering there were 40 Terminators with Storm Shields. Oh, it was a hilarious game, because Krytos was my sacrifice unit, and I was able to nuke it in with my Melters, and then his Terminators had to cut through a weapons girl 5 20-man block of despoilers, and it doesn't matter how good your armor saves are if I'm making you roll 35 saves. It was a grinding game, but it was just like, once I had the weapon skill advantage on him, Terminators flail around and can't hit anything. So, which I think, okay, probably is a good point for us to start tacking into Heresy experience.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, I had never played Heresy in my life. I was a guy who played 40k and a bit of Titanicus here and there. I started playing a lot more Titanicus, and I started coming across people who played Titanicus because it was Horus Heresy, and I started being drawn into this weird community of very positive people that have an incredible passion for the hobby and not a passion of being best gamer in the room. And then there's this idealized view of what the Heresy community is. I think all of us here have been at that event where it's been like, that was a really good event. Everyone was playing not to win, but for fun. And that is what many of us see the community as. But at the same time, if you stop and look at the Heresy community for any time, you see the cracks in it. You see the problems. And I think we're in a really interesting place right now where we could lose what we had very quickly. And I think it's worthwhile, the three of us here, talking through what's good about Heresy, what vibes are good, what things are bad, even stuff that feels positive that's gonna, yeah, our opinions on it. And, yeah. I suppose let's start right at the top with the idea of passion. Like, there is something about the Heresy, and I'm sure both of you can agree, that there's just, people want more out of it than just to win. They want...
So I've been playing Warhammer since third edition dropped. I was first introduced to it just at the tag end of second edition. There was a little bit of a lag between when I was first introduced and when I actually got into the game. So I've played all the way through the drop of eighth edition. Didn't care for eighth edition, but I was already playing Heresy by then. So, you know, I had a comparison there. So I've been running events as well through a lot of that time. I have the experience not only as a player, but as an EO. And this is what got me into Heresy. I got into Heresy during 7th edition 40K because one of the guys locally wanted to get me into Heresy. And what he eventually presented to me that made me go, yeah, that sounds like where I want to be. He pointed out that the Heresy community at that time was much more like the old days of 3rd and 4th and 5th edition. And the type of games and the type of players that were playing then, because by the time you got to 7th edition, that cutthroat mentality that is what 40K is really known for now. I mean, ask a lot of people and they'll tell you, yeah, there's some narrative players, but mostly, you know, 40K is around the tournament player and around the, you know, the hardcore player. And a lot of that was coming out in 6th and 7th edition, especially with the ITC and so forth. I was just starting not to like the game anymore. My favorite example of the kind of games I was playing is I was playing what was nominally supposed to be a casual tournament event. You know, it wasn't an ITC event. It wasn't the Ard Boys or anything like that. It was supposed to just be, you know, a bunch of people getting together and having fun. I was running my Ionden army, which is this nice bright yellow army. At the time, we were using, you know, actual like railroad trees and everything. And then a guy says, yeah, I can't tell you what that model is, but I can see the yellow between the pine needles. That means I have line of sight. And I'm like, you can't even tell me what the model is. All you can tell me is yellow. So you're telling me if I painted my army green, you wouldn't have line of sight? He says, yeah, but you painted it yellow, so I have line of sight. And then turned around because it happened to be a squadron of Vipers, said, oh, I'm going to drop it over on the other end of the Vipers where I literally can't see anything. And blast everything over there because there was other stuff around that using the cover. And he went, because it says I can put it anywhere on the unit. So I can see the model behind the tree. I can't tell you what it is, but I can declare I have line of sight there. And then I can put it on any model in the unit. So I'm going to blow up your entire army with a pie plate with a model that can't see anything. Sort of level of stupidity was what was coming around at that time and really getting me frustrated, both as a player and as an EO. I got into Heresy because it was a much more laid back, just wanting to play and have fun thing. And that's the community that we had at that time and kind of did up until just before Heresy 2.0 came out. And things have changed with Heresy 2.0 because there's a lot more exposure to the game. And so we're seeing a lot of change in the community, but the community as a whole is still trying to hold on to that whole, we're here more to have fun, and the important rule of having fun is making sure the people you're playing with have as much fun as you do. We don't want the kind of community where the only way for you to have fun is to make sure everybody else doesn't.
I think I would start by saying the Heresy community, in my experience, has never been as friendly as they like to present them. I didn't get into Heresy until like traveling for Heresy stuff until 2020. So, you know, obviously pretty late. Late in the game. I'm not going to pretend that I was around, you know, a decade ago, right? I'm not going to try to give any false ideas about that. So I'm really talking about like 2021, last year and this year. And, you know, even back in the day, right, there were bad ideas. And what was a bad idea was both pretty obtuse in the, and when you went to events, not well communicated. For example, tactical Marines in first edition, right, were infamously a trap. And, you know, if you had a scene, if you had people who kind of knew it was up, you would know to like do other stuff than tacticals. But if you didn't, and you go to an event, like, you know, you have lost preemptively. I'll never forget one of my first games at Phyrex in 22. So this was like Heresy 2 had just been announced at Adepticon, but it was still Heresy 1. Was against this Solar Auxilia army that templated me off the table in a turn. And then the guy after the game said, "I'm really sorry about that match. I didn't know it was this type of..." And because I had, you know, Tactical Marines, I had a Thunderhawk. Like, I had nothing that was very good. And I've thought about kind of the issue. I think, Will, you're dead on that. There's a lot of people who came to Heresy because the 40K rules at the time were not very fun or interesting. And the type of people that you would play at an event were also not very cool. And I think 9th edition 40K is in a similar spot. There's a lot of rules bloat. A lot of people were not really feeling the addition. And, you know, a lot of people came to Heresy for something different, for something that was not, you know, hold one, hold two, hold more, ad infinitum. But Heresy players, how to put it, everybody likes winning. Some people like winning a lot more than they like losing, and will show up to events with real mean stuff. And that's not inherently a problem. Like, a win at all costs player, if we want to use the shorthand, is not inherently an issue. The issue is when they fight against someone who is not of a similar mind or who did not come expecting that type. In my experience, because there's this huge aversion in Heresy to like the word tournament or competitive play, at least in the US, I understand like there are tournaments in Europe and in Australia much more commonly. In the States, it's a very uncommon thing. And there's this huge aversion in the States towards, I'm air quoting here, competitive Heresy. I think that's actually intensely damaging to the community, because when we say, oh, it's a narrative fun event, that doesn't really level set expectations around, should I bring Fury of the Ancients? Should I bring Stone Gauntlet? Should I bring Custode? You know, these types of like really powerful Rite of Wars or skew lists, we don't level set expectations. And that opens the door, I think, for people who want to, you know, win more, for lack of a better term, to bring like those kinds of lists and just kind of, you know, wreck people. My perspective on it is, the phrase I like to use is, no gaming is better than bad game. A game of Horus Heresy at 3,000 points takes somewhere between 2 to 3 hours to play, generally. And if you have a game that you know won't be fun because you didn't bring the stuff to crack 17 Contemptors or 60 Custodes or whatever the list du jour might be, just don't. You know, just don't. Go do literally anything else. Life is too precious. You don't owe anybody else your time for an experience like that. I would argue that what the Heresy community in the US really badly needs is some consistency around what events mean, like what a narrative event actually means, what should be there, what shouldn't be there. I would argue like not more control, but more communication about like what is the type of thing I should bring or shouldn't bring. And also, an opening up of the idea that like it's okay for people that want to go hard to go hard. Like, that's fine. We just need to make sure that there is an event that like sets that expectation, that you know, oh, I'm going to run into, you know, a bunch of Rapier Laser Destroyers. I'm going to run into, you know, a bunch of Kratos squadrons. I feel like if the expectation is there, that I can like read the thing and decide if I want to do it. But the way that things are communicated now, it's very hard to know like what is the appropriate like level of stuff for me to bring to this event. And it's very easy for me or you or anybody to like go way too hard accidentally. And that sucks too.
Yeah, so I want to loop back to the win at all costs narrative debate here in a second. You touched on a really important point, which I think undercuts some of the other narrative whack stuff. I think the other side, I started this by talking about the Heresy community is noted for its passion. I think the other side of passion, I think, is that it's very easy for passionate people to look down upon people who do not have that passion, and it leads to a sort of a dreaded word, gatekeeping, that can be pretty heavy in the community. And that's sort of, you mentioned at the start, you know, perhaps the Heresy community isn't always the nice, friendliest of places. It can be very hard for someone playing 40K to make that step over into Heresy. Because it's like, oh, you're a 40K player, you aren't playing Heresy. I know I felt very much like the outside of the longest, until I brought in and I sort of came in that side door by doing Titanicus first. Like, it seemed an impenetrable barrier, the forums where the Heresy players lived on Boltron Chainsword back in the day, were places I did not like commenting, because I was not a Heresy player, and it was very clear that I was looked down upon because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be the exposure of where you are in the community, too, because you're talking about, like, Boltron Chainsword, and there's a couple of other places I've heard where, you know, people's experience of the Heresy community is absolutely horrid, and yet I've never had that experience, but mostly it's because I've never been to those forums. I've never had any urge to go to Boltron Chainsword because and this is pre me getting into Heresy. This was just me playing 40K was, aside from going there and seeing some cool models, most of my experience in those forums was absolutely negative and was some of the worst experiences I've ever had in any hobby community.
I would definitely agree that, like, I have, you're not the only person, Martin, that's been turned off by kind of the online 30K prints. What I remember getting into a discussion with somebody who was like, you know, I can't play Heresy because everybody's going to care about what armor mark my guys are. And if I have guys in the wrong armor mark, they're going to give me shit. And I had to be like, at no event where people are actually playing this game will anyone actually care. Like, no one is going to be like salty because you have Mark 6 and Mark 3. Like, no one actually. It's people on the internet who are going to say, oh, you can't have, you know, Mark 6 Iron Warriors because they hated the armor mark. It's like, no, who cares?
Quick, I mean, I totally agree. I think I probably could have put Primaris Marine in my word bearers and no one noticed. Like, because you don't, not when there's 3,000 points on the table. But to loop to the point about Boltron Chainsword, you actually hit a really key point here, which I think is really big for the community, is that when I was on the Boltron Chainsword and I was on it 6 hours a day when I should have been working.
Oh,
yeah, no, I used to live on that forum.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I loved it. The little nexus of where I was, the Renegade and Heretic sub-forum, the Chaos sub-forum, where I had my buddies and we hung out, it was great. And I still think like that was, I had some of the great hobby experiences there. And it's hard for me to hear people saying how it's inaccessible, because in that world, I was accepted. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing going on in the Heresy community. We all think, oh, it's a great, wonderful place. We're all friends. No one's an asshole around here. But actually, no, everyone's an asshole on the wrong day.
Well, and the anonymity of the internet, I think.
It's bigger than that, because, I mean, walking over to Heresy people at Adepticon and you're just a 40K player, the Heresy community is the expectation that, oh, you're going to be great welcoming, but, you know, maybe you run into someone who's having a bad day, maybe you run into someone who's distracted and trying to do something else, and that interaction isn't perfect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. There was definitely, just to fall on that point, at Adepticon this year, the Heresy room was right next to the Golden Demon room, the Golden Demon display. She had a lot of people coming in and checking out the room, and, you know, sometimes you'd be getting questions while you're, like, mid-die roll and trying to do a thing. So yeah, no, that you know, you don't get a perfect experience, you know, definitely has.
The community as a whole, we're in a weird influx, as you brought it, Will, that the community's growing rapidly. And one of the problems you get when a community grows rapidly is that a small community, which it was, everyone knows everyone. And once you get bigger, you start not knowing people, and that lack of trust is a big thing.
Well, I was actually thinking about this on the, I drove to Adepticon, which is about a 16, 17 hour drive from Austin. I had time to think. And one of the things that I really thought about was, you're right, Heresy's grown tremendously, but also Warhammer as a hobby is bigger now than it has ever been by orders of magnitude. There are dramatically more people playing 40K now than played 40K in 3rd edition or 4th edition or these other editions that old people like us liked. Right? When I think about the steps a 40K player has to go through today to get into Heresy, it's so much harder because they don't have that, not just mechanical understanding, but the like vibes-based experience of Heresy descends directly from a type of 40K that really doesn't exist anymore. 40K has been so focused around like the tournament and competitive scene for so long now that, you know, for a lot of people, that's just the way the game is played. If you watch a YouTube battle report, you're not going to see, you know, the 30K channel guys. You're going to see Tabletop Titan or Tactics or, you know, those guys. And they're playing, you know, matched play 40K, 2,000 points. Like, that's the game you're going to see. So people coming into the hobby now don't have a frame of reference for the type of game that, you know, older Heresy players are wanting.
Absolutely. And you just made me sort of realize that Heresy and the Heresy community in some ways is what 40K was before Frontline Gaming came along, especially in the States. And I think that's what we're clinging to. And I think trying to get people into the community can be a bit of...
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that's why, to me, like, it's one of the reasons I do the Battle of Lost Souls show. It's why I'm happy to come here and do this show. Like, this type of media is important because if Heresy players really do want to preserve sort of the way that it used to be, they want to preserve that kind of, whether it was real or not, that idea of Heresy as like a friendly narrative, you know, sort of casual experience where it's more about the beer and pretzels and the fun time than it is about the mechanical accuracy. Like, you've got to put that energy out there. You've got to show it. You've got to show that, like, that's, you know, the game. That's the vibe. That's what you're doing. So that when people are looking at games like Battletech or Warhammer or, you know, X-Wing, you know, they can see that, like, oh, you know, I see this game is very competitive and tournament-minded, but these guys seem to be having, like, crazy fun and wild stuff is happening, and maybe I want to do that experience. You know, I generally would say that, like, the more that Heresy, the older community, like, becomes insular and sort of sets these sort of standards. I don't want to say gatekeep, the right word for what I've seen, but they have this kind of like unwritten code. And, you know, you don't know what the code is till you like go to an event or play somebody and realize that you've violated the. I think that's genuinely one of the bigger hurdles the game has preventing its further growth is like, you know, you've got to get out there and show people like the type of player that you are, the type of games you enjoy having. You've got to do that in front of people. When I did GW Open in Chicago last year, where I brought this Raven Guard army that I'd spent hours, you know, building and painting and converting, and people would come by from the 40K room and just be amazed at the quality of the armies that were on display and at how, like, none of us were getting really mad at each other. We were, like, high-fiving each other when cool stuff happened. You know, we had, like, intense moments, but we also had these really fun moments of just, like, enjoying a game of Warhammer with each other. And the amount of 40K players who saw that and then went over to the GW store booth and bought Heresy stuff was incredible.
I think I actually have a really good follow-on on this, and because it's something that we saw with the Heresy 2.0 launch event, and I think it really does describe what you're talking about here, is the media that is used to build the community for 30K versus the media that's used to build the 40K and so forth. 40K has a huge YouTube and Twitch presence. 30K had a lot of the YouTube channels that did 30K because of COVID stopped and eventually just stopped altogether. So there's not really the YouTube presence that there was pre-COVID for 30K. And 30K's never really had the Twitch presence. The community as a whole is mostly driven by podcasts like this one, especially podcasts like The Eye of Horus and Radio Free Istvan, you know, to the point where the whole reason we talk about things like Frontline versus Centurion versus Zone Mortalis, well, Centurion is not an official format. Centurion is something that the guys in Australia came up with, and it's even been mentioned in The White Dwarf, you know, as you know, this great thing that the community came up with, but it was done through podcasts. This is how we found out about this and how we communicated, and as well as a lot through like Facebook and so forth. But that's not the medium that the people coming from 40K are used to, and not the medium that they're going to go looking for. So they don't see the kind of community we have, other than the little bit that they may experience through some of the larger Facebook groups if they stumble into them. You know, because how many heresy Facebook groups are there out there, and how many of them are longstanding, have been around since the old days, and how many of them are new popping up right now? And the 40K people have their own kind of experience and are kind of creating their own kind of community within the heresy, because they're not aware of where the heresy community, where to go and interact with the current heresy community, because it's not in the same places that they're used to for, you know, AOS or 40K. And part of that, and what I was saying before was with the Heresy 2.0 launch, they had, we're going to bring in all these great influencers for the Heresy Weekender. All of your favorites, like a whole long list of people nobody in the Heresy community has ever heard of.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. A lot of the YouTube content creators pre-pandemic, the ones who are still going, I've sort of, in my mind, labeled them as salt miners these days. Because...
hey, leave Macca out of this.
Well, it's not just him. He's a great example of it, but he's kind of does it with a kind of tongue-in-cheek way. But there's definitely a vibe of people, and it's more than just heresy, that have realized a great way to run the algorithm is to make controversial posts.
Oh yeah, and that's not just heresy. That's not even wargaming hobby. That's YouTube. Period.
Yeah, as I said, the problem we sort of have is a lot of the heresy content that is available is produced by these salt mines, these people who deliberately create controversy to get hits. And that does permeate that initial undercurrent of conversation a lot of people. And it occasionally, like, it's, you get the sense it's sort of inroding into the larger community. It's very easy for people to find that content and pick up the artificial dissatisfaction.
So are you saying that, like, there's an issue where, like, in order to generate traffic, people are being, like, negative about, in this case, Warhammer, and that is sort of having a bleed-on effect? Is that kind of where you're going?
Yeah, and it's, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you go on and you go on rants about, you know, how... A great example is one we just done ourselves at the start of the news section, is you continually talk about how we're missing content, and you use that to drive, you allow you to create content. It's easy to create, and it's easy for people to then take that and thought meme and carry it on. And also because then there are people complaining about absolutely everything, when someone else comes along in the same medium, specifically going to say YouTube here, it can be very hard to say, hey, this person here has actually got some good points.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with.
Specifically at this point, I'm going to, as far as you're concerned with your Elder Souls blog, I've talked to you before. I think it's a really good, I've enjoyed many of the videos. I have trouble because it's Bell of Lost Souls. And it carries a weight. I'm not going to, like, because it is, at times, got a bit of a reputation, which your content doesn't deserve.
I think the fact that his content on Bowls and the reputation Bowls has is exactly to the point that we're having this conversation here.
Yeah. And it's weird, because actually, Bowls is a very weird one. It's because actually a lot of their content isn't that bad. But the problem is occasionally they've got that other layer, which does sort of drag down everything else.
Yeah.
If you know what to look for on Bowls, you get some really good stuff.
You know, obviously, like you know, we partner with Bell of Lost Souls because they're in Austin. Matt, who's kind of their studio guy, is really great. He's wonderful to work with. And it's a lot easier than kind of doing our own studio setup and stuff like that. But, you know, I really, like, one of the reasons that we do that show is I want to put out, like, that kind of energy. Like, I want to be welcoming to new players. I want to walk them through stuff. Like, we're ranking all of the generic Rider Wars by, you know, what legions are great in what Rider War. Our best performing video, unsurprisingly, is rating all of the Space Marine legions. And, you know, we focus in on the mechanics because that's not a thing we saw commonly done. You know, the Art of War guys did a little bit of it, but, you know, they're not fantastic at rules literacy and heresy. I think they, you know, their content was solid, but, you know, I felt like there was a chance for us to kind of deep dive into the legions. And now, you know, we have this opportunity to be like, okay, you know, we have these generic Rider Wars, but they're sort of in this weird spot in the book, and it's not really clear like why you would take them or what they're for and how they'd interact with your Imperial Fists or Word Bearers or whatever, right? You know, we credit I'm going to give credit here. One of the Goonhammer authors who, after our initial tier videos, was like, you know, it'd be more interesting to talk about, you know, the Rite of Wars than just to like rate the Legion. They were correct. So, so that's what we did.
I will say the Goonhammer guys, I want to give them a shout out because they do a really good job of being fairly unbiased over all of the platforms and all of the everything that they've done. So I definitely want to give them an extra shout out.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if any of your listeners are looking for like getting started articles, I think the best getting started heresy articles are the Goonhammer stuff by a mile. Like, they're really well done.
Yeah,
and updated.
I have to say, the Goonhammer team is sincere with what they're doing all the way down. Mm-hmm. Which I think people are very aware of insincerity, which is, I enjoy your content. Bell of the Souls has some people who are definitely out to make a profit. And you can tell this is a for-profit company. And that sends...
Well, everybody's out to make a profit. Well, let's be clear about that.
But they are corporate about it, which is fine. It does sort of... I don't think the best way to put it... Actually, it's not a good... There's an easy way to put it. At times, the whole wargaming scene feels like the punk music scene. And places like Bell of the Souls feels like folks who've sold out, when that's a lie, because we all have.
I mean, you can make the argument, certainly, that they're like the guy in the suit in the back of the punk show, right? Like, they're the record label exec. You know, we talked about platforms earlier, and I think it's one of those things, you know, Will, you mentioned that, you know, GW said, here's all your favorite influencers, and none of them were the 30K guys. But all of those influencers, you know, YouTube people, have, you know, followers in the hundreds of thousands or millions. And, you know, people care about what, you know, Ninjan or what, you know, these other people have to say, rightly or wrongly. That is sort of, you know, how it happens. And, you know, GW was really making an attempt, I think, with Heresy 2.0 to attract people who weren't already playing Heresy. I think that was a really big effort on their part, was to go and say, like, you don't know what Horus Heresy is. You don't have 20 resin tanks in your battle foam cases, you know. You're not walking around with your Primarch Cataphracti Death Ball in a big chonkin Spartan.
And I agree with that, was what their sentiment was. But my point at that time was in saying that it shows the difference between where 40K and Age of Sigmar are getting their content versus and building their community, than where Horus Heresy is building their community, which is why the Horus Heresy community, with all these 40K people coming in, they don't know where to go looking for the Horus Heresy community, and they get these skewed views of what the community is.
Yeah, I think as far as that goes, Mike, I have two concerns with how they did the initial influencers. I really wish there was at least one person who had been someone who'd done 30K content before regularly, because there were a few people around who could have been put into that pool who weren't. I won't know the full stories. Maybe they were offered and they turned it down because it was a commitment. You have to go and spend a week at GW, and there are only a selection of people who probably have the number of followers that they were willing to spend the money on who could have said yes. But my actual concern was the guys then, when they had them all there at Warhammer World, it felt like they didn't show them how the game worked. When they went home and made the content, it wasn't good content. I think a great example of that is the Play on Tabletop guys. I really like the Play on Tabletop guys. I think their channel's absolutely fantastic for 40K. But their Horus Heresy mission they did, because they did a game with models, and it was just, they made a lot of mistakes that would have been clear if they knew their content a little better. And you would have felt that if you'd actually had them at Warhammer World for a couple of days, they could have at least been briefed.
There are people that I'm sure we all know who play Heresy on the regular, who get the rules wrong quite a bit. In fact, I myself might be one of them. To me, what was interesting is those channels all did, you know, Horus Heresy videos when the box dropped and they showed off the armies. They talked about how cool it was. And then like about a month later, you know, back to the 40K mil. Heresy. I do want to shout out SN Battle Reports, who does very regular Heresy battle reports, and they're excellent. I mean, genuinely quite great stuff. They engage with the Heresy communities on Facebook. Steve Pardo, I think, is the main guy there. And I think they probably have the best like example of the way Heresy gaming is played, you know, more than like the bigger channels like Tabletop Tactics and stuff. Like they, for lack of a better term, SN gets it. And, you know, the other channels were like, here's the thing GW wants us to push. Now we're going to go back to where the numbers are.
I think, what's he called? Broadsword Gaming and Zorpazorp did some good stuff.
That video series, so for those who haven't seen it, that's Broadsword Wargaming and Zorpazorp did a sort of a narrative recreation of the betrayal of Kalth across tons of different scenarios, various point levels. None of it is like in book missions. It was filmed, I guess, before Heresy 2 was like really out. So some of the rules are definitely different than what's in the core book. I would say it's not a great, like, do you want to learn how the game is specifically played? I don't think it's great at that. But those videos to me are like the ideal, perfect Heresy game. Like here's us taking this thing from a book that we think is and playing the scenario out. If anything is Heresy as a historical war game, that's it.
I mean, Zorpazorp is a fantastic Lord of the Rings. Like, he makes me interested in Lord of the Rings wargaming, which is hard to do, I won't lie. Mm-hmm. And he managed to pull it off. So his Heresy stuff was top tier. And
so I think this might be a good segue to actually discussing what do we consider, you know, good games of Heresy, you know, versus just running straight out of the book doing a tournament like we would with 40K.
Yeah, no, I think that's a... I've sort of got my notes down here to return to that narrative versus whack conversation. I think that's really what is a good game of Heresy.
So, Will, you're an EO. I'm really curious on your thoughts here.
Well, I was gonna say this is really why I'm here tonight is to talk about and recap with the game that I ran that Martin was in, and you know I can go over what I did for a game and the kind of stuff that I run as events.
One second there, Will. Let's preface that. So last weekend I played a two-game event down in Texas, and for some of you will have seen my Facebook posts about it. It was currently the best gaming experience I've had in recent memory.
Awesome.
I just want to state that right now, because I'm really happy with how it went. So, although I may sound critical in the minute, I want to be very clear that it is the high watermark for where I'm expecting games to be.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
There was very few games where I felt players were better to each other. There was one I can come back to. But,
oh no!
Yeah, I think for the most part it played really, really well, and I walked away with the biggest smile on my face and bounced through my Sunday in an immensely happy place, which is exactly what I want to do after I come back from.
So I will say that this was a lot more elaborate of an event than what I normally run for our bi-monthly events here in North Texas. But the event that I was running this past weekend was a lot more involved, a lot more narrative, where each mission had its own little story. Like, so first of all, let me set the stage. The name of the event was In the Shadows of Titan. The basic narrative was this was set on Beta Garmin. So each and every table had a Titan on it because you were fighting around the feet of the Titans. There were environmental effects that would go off. So I had a timer, and every 20 minutes I would roll for every single table on an environmental effects table. If I rolled high enough, your table got an environmental effect, like stray Vulcan megabolter shots hit the table near the Titan. And if you were too close to the Titan, you'd get hit with stray shots or a stray turbo laser shot would go past. You know, quake cannon would go off nearby and cause your units within an area near where the quake cannon go off start staggering and they would move a D6 in a random direction. We also had, if I rolled boxcars, the Titan on your table was hit and staggered and fell over. And we did actually have that happen on one of the tables during the event, where it staggered and fell onto a bunch of units. So those were the environmental effects of, hey, you're fighting underneath a bunch of Titans that don't care that you're there and don't care if they miss and happen to hit you. But then each of the missions had a little story associated with them. So the Traitor's Lament was, as Horus's fleet was coming, there was an Archmagos that wanted to defect. And so he stole plans for the defenses and tried to run off. But the first thing he ran into was a bunch of Night Lords that went, hey, there's something fun to kill. And so now he was running around hiding in the ruins, trying to get hooked up with the Dark Mechanicum. And the Loyalist forces are trying to capture him before the Traitor forces do. And the Traitor forces are trying to capture him, well, because he's useful. And so this is the story as you go looking for where he is. And then once you have him, you have to keep control of him. And he's going to fight tooth and nail to be recaptured, by the way. So unless you're Dark Mechanicum, he will try to fight you when you try to close in and capture him. So, yes, in my example here, Dark Mechanicum actually got a bonus in the mission because it was specific to their story. There was another event that's the propaganda war where you're trying to either reinforce loyalty of the Imperial citizens or just scare the crap out of them. And in the propaganda war, Night Lords are really good at that. So if you happen to be running Night Lords, you got a bonus on the propaganda war. So each of these missions might or might not have a bonus based upon their individual stories. And then the different missions actually had impact on the second round. So for example, with the Traitor's Lament, if the Traitors actually captured the Archmagos and got the defense plans, well, in round two, they could automatically choose to seize on one table. Because the way that the missions were determined was each side had a warlord. The warlord was assigned the missions, and then those were divvied out however the warlord and his side decided that they were going to divvy out the missions. You know, in the case of the Night Lords, well, we were running two tables of the propaganda war, so both tables with propaganda war got Night Lords on it, because that makes sense. In the second round, the warlords got bonuses and so forth based upon how the first round went. So if the Dark Mechanicum captures the Archmagos, they can get a free seize on any table that they pick. The one of the missions was a resource war. And so you were going around trying to grab up all of these little crates of ammo and other supplies. And at the end of the game, how many you grabbed determines who won that particular round. But also those little crates now get handed over to the warlord. In the next round, the warlord passes out those crates, and each crate represents a free reroll in the second round.
That was really good. I would want to point out I was the warlord Traitors, which is also why me and the word bearer player were the two with the most rerolls.
Picking favorites, exactly. And I will mention that the other warlord was Lucas, who was the guy that put on Taking Ferex at Adepticon this year.
I was it, which was good, but it wasn't just the way we selected missions was really nice, because though we couldn't work out who our opponent was, he gave us all of the mission packets. So I read all the mission packets over lunch and went, okay, here we go. And then I was able to hand them out. And because it wasn't so much like I'm pairing you against this other person, we had a conversation about, hey, can you do this mission? Which meant players could be like, I can't play that game. That game's going to be horrible for me to play. I'm not going to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a really good way of resolving a lot of issues that can happen with wonky missions.
Yeah, because that way you don't end up in the mission where, you know, you need to have a character to do this, and oh, you're playing knights and your knights don't have any characters or something like that. Now, granted, it was a two-round event, so that probably helped limit the chances for that to happen. But because you don't know who you're going to end up playing against, you might end up playing against the same person multiple times. But in this event, it didn't happen because each person was trying to do their own mission. And for the most part, there was two missions that get repeated in the second round for narrative reasons. But most part, the second round had all new missions. So just because you couldn't do a mission in the first round and that, so you got stuck doing something else that you didn't necessarily want, there were, in the second round, they're all new missions. So the odds of you getting paired up against the same person again were kind of low, because the odds of you both being uniquely suited for the mission that you've got two times in a row were kind of low.
Worked really well.
And each table was set up specific to the narrative of its thing. So that's part of the reason you didn't know who you were playing, because you picked your mission And by picking your mission, you picked your table. And then whoever was on the other side that also picked that mission, that's who you end up on that table with.
And I won't lie, that was knowing which table we were playing on also helped us pick missions, because for the night, we had a Praetor Knight player on, and before we were like, well, you confirm you're going to take that mission, go and check the table. Are you okay with your knights on that table? Because that can be an issue for that sort of army.
So. Yeah, because one of the missions was, one of the tables had a lot more open terrain because of the nature of that particular mission, so it worked better for him.
I definitely, looping back, that was, like I said, it was, I can go on for a while about why the individual games were great for me. We sort of set the big framework of how the game ran. It is so different than standard 40k tournament, where it's just like, here's your assigned players. And I think Heresy starts to fail when you start moving into the, oh, this is the mission you're doing, these are the people you're playing, and I don't really have much say in it.
Yeah, I will say that I did go to an event where, now they were specific to try and make sure that it was always a loyalist and traitor playing against each other, so there was a lot of, they were using Best Coast pairing, and so after they would generate the new tables, then they'd have to go through and rejigger everything so that it was loyalist versus traitor instead of just whoever won, which, you know, ended up with a lot of long drawn out things. And they did do the whole, we're going to do at this table is a set mission with a set deployment zone. But the way they did it was they printed off a bunch of mission sheets and they printed off a bunch of deployment zone sheets and just went around and put them on tables. And that kind of worked, but it kind of didn't, because certain mission and deployment combinations are an absolute nightmare to point up afterward. For example, things like Shadow Strike, which is the one getting into your opponent's deployment zone. And I can't remember the name of the other one, but it's the one where you get points for controlling your deployment zone, your no man's land, and your opponent's deployment zone. Well, if you do either one of those and do Vanguard Strike, well, Vanguard Strike is the longest deployment setup in the game because it's the most complicated to get everything set up and everything. And if you're doing something like based around zones, no man land or deployment zones, at the end of the game, you now have to turn around and set up the deployment zone all over again to determine where the deployment zones are, to tell if a unit is in or out of the deployment zone. And that's just not a great combination of map and mission, you know, whereas if you're going in and you're designing the table for the mission that you're doing, which, you know, a lot of times that's things that people try to do in Heresy events, you're designing it where, you know, the table is matched to the mission. The mission is something that you can know in advance. Well, I will tell you, for this event, people did not know in advance. They knew when they were picking their missions. Because of the narrative nature of it, I intentionally did not post up a packet with the actual missions in advance for everybody, because I wanted the stories to be surprising, and I wanted the narrative impact that they were going to have from round one to round two be something that people weren't going to expect. I did give them warning that, you know, this is not going to be traditional. This is that, you know, hey guys, there's going to be environmental effects, setting expectations as we were discussing before. I did tell everybody, yes, there are going to be environmental effects. They will have effects on your army. It is not something that you are going to know or control in advance. It will mean that occasionally things will happen that you just makes things go badly for you.
We talk about this, the great event, for a while, and we may come back to it. But I think while we're still talking about what made a really effective event work, I'd like to hear about a less effective event. I know, Munji, you had a really negative experience at Adepticon.
Yeah.
You want to play compare and contrast?
So I'll talk about it. So I did two Heresy events at Adepticon 2023. The Heresy doubles event, which is really kind of like a casual, fun time kind of event. That's what it was. And I did the Taking of Phyrex, which runs it. It's a fantastic sort of zone mortala, sort of more traditional 3k games, 1v1 type of deal. So the Heresy doubles event was, I think the organizers did a really fun job with it. We didn't know the missions ahead of time, but the missions all linked into each other, and we kind of sorted ourselves into like loyalist teams and traitor teams and paired off based on that. You know, there wasn't like Swiss pairings, there wasn't match, you know, in my experience, most Heresy events don't do sort of formal pairings. Do like, you know, get, you're a loyalist, find a traitor, or vice versa. Anyway, so doubles event was the second round of sort of a three round thing. They do game Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and each game sort of fighting for control of this one city, and or each sort of series of games. So like a Zone Mortalis at a doubles event, and they did kind of a on Sunday. Anywho, the doubles event, yeah. So I was playing World Eaters. My buddy John was playing Iron Warriors. So, you know, we had done the usual kind of event scramble to like get armies together, make sure they look good. I was doing weathering powders and stuff in my hotel room days leading up to the event. So, but you know, I was really excited for it. And, you know, you don't really know what your missions are. You don't really know who you're getting paired up against. So, you know, we had a thing where I think to round one, loyalists could sort of pick their table. And we kind of ran around to find like loyalists to go fight. So we line up against these two dudes. And it's one guy who's, I think, very familiar with Heresy, and another guy who, like, you know, couldn't really bring an army, and they're playing Custodes. And, you know, we are not really geared to fight Custodes, so it's a pretty brutal, and, you know, I will say, like, the mission was really cool. I actually kept the mission pack, but World Eaters can't really beat Custodes because melee marines are bad men. And my buddy John had a really flavorful Iron Warriors army that did not have a lot of AP or melee. So the Custodes kind of just walked through him. So it was kind of a downer. I'll also say, you know, me personally, one of the really important things about a good is like the armies that your opponent brings, like seeing a really good army across the table makes hard games easier, but the inverse is also fighting an already hard game. And, you know, my impression was, you know, they were Custodes. They were painted, you know, they were based, but there was a lot of 3D prints. The print lines were not good. You know, they were very visible. You know, there was a lot of Custodes dreadnoughts. There was a lot of Custodes guys. And it was, you know, it was an army that I felt, you know, we were going to get tabled. I wanted to call it early. John wanted to play it out. We played it out for three rounds, then we were done. The second game, I think, later on led to more controversy. I definitely get some hell from some folks for talking about this experience. But, you know, we fought a Sisters of Silence player who partnered with his buddy who had Fury of the Ancients. So it was like, I think seven Contemptors, and then the Sisters of Silence army was all 3D printed. I don't really have anything against playing against 3D printed armies, but I look for people who, like, you know, I'm looking for like the care, the passion, the, like, you know, put the work into the piece, right? And I didn't really feel that. I felt like he, you know, printed the Sisters army because he thought it would be a fun army, and it was painted competently. But there was also a lot of like, he's running the Beastmaster unit because they can be T5 with a 3-up save. And, you know, he's running kind of like the hard stuff you would expect to see in somebody kind of building a hard Sisters list. And then on top of that, you know, I felt like we could have maybe had a fun game there, but then it was Dreadnoughts. And I, you know, I had Rampagers that were tooled up to do stuff, and they were able to kill a couple things. We had nothing that could touch the Dreadnoughts. So the Dreadnoughts just, like, we basically ignored that guy's whole army because we couldn't do anything. And, you know, I know, because after discussions on Facebook and talking with that guy with the Dreadnoughts, like, he didn't have a lot of time to practice or learn the game. You know, his dad with kids, and that was an army that he could, like, paint quickly and do that kind of stuff. I don't begrudge that. But it was another one of those scenarios where, you know, the game was going to be hard and fun. None of the armies that were across the table made the experience easier. I felt like, you know, the opponents did not, you know, I'll own some responsibility here. I was pretty salty. I was not in a great mood, but I felt, you know, I just did not have a good time playing against those people. And, you know, it was another thing where we called it about three rounds. I was going to call it the end of round two. John wanted to play another round, and so we did, and, you know, not fun. You know, when I look at that kind of an experience, though, to me, you know, the only restriction the organizers had was 1500 point lists per player. So that takes out a lot of like really, you know, sort of problematic stuff. The Primarchs aren't going to show up, right? Titans aren't going to hit the table. You know, it's really tricky to fit a Knight Porphyron in there and have much of anything. But, you know, they really didn't have any other guidelines past that. And so we just, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, we got two bad matchups and it was a 2-round event. And so that was my, you know, entry. And, you know, I talked about it sort of with the organizers. I don't shy of list restrictions. And that's a very touchy subject because you want your event to be open to as many people as possible, especially at a show like Adepticon, you're as many players as you can, you know, and that means sometimes you're just going to get that kind of stuff.
I have two sort of questions. When you picked the opponents, was you aware of their lists?
We knew about the Sisters of Silence guy, and we're like, yeah, we'll fight Sisters of Silence. His buddy had the dreadnoughts under the table, so we didn't see them.
Okay.
Custodes, we had no idea. We were just like, are you loyalists? You're loyalists? Okay, we'll sit down and...
That...
And in fairness, they didn't know our lists.
That's what I just wanted to... That explains... As you were telling me the story, I was like, two really bad lists, but you weren't... Yeah.
For what it's worth, the pairing system was the exact same Phyrex on the second day. You know, your loyalists or your traitors line up, find opponents. You can challenge specific people. Like, it was the same deal. But I think, you know, I think the big things that were different there was that I had two opponents who were fantastic. I was playing a list that I had spent a lot of time building and painting and doing a bit of conversion work on. I was Armored Spearhead, and I took the Ultramarines tank sergeant guy and did a conversion on him to make him my warlord and stuff. So, you know, I had a much better time there, but I think I had more fun opponents. I think the armies looked better, and I was playing an army I was much more excited to run. So, yeah.
It's really good to hear the like full story. It's here and there. I think some of the points you touched on, it's like, we started way back at the start saying heresy is about, in many ways, about passion, and it does seem to be that, like, that's what was missing in many ways.
Well, it's worth saying for me, like, the hobby part of heresy is extremely important, right? I mean, I've got an amount of Age of Sigmar and 40K armies, and I've got several heresy armies. But my heresy armies, I try and really go the extra mile. I do stuff I wouldn't normally do on the whole army. When we did our, you know, new sort of player league, Horus Heresy in Austin, one of the requirements I put down was every unit's got to be painted. And I lost players because they were like, well, that's, you know, elitism. And that's, you're asking me to paint, like, to paint an unreasonable amount of stuff. And I definitely lost players. I definitely know that restriction meant they didn't play. And I was like, that's cool. The people who are going to play are going to have a better time because they're playing against, like, armies that people have put time into and really care about. So, you know. And for what it's worth, the armies I saw at Adepticon last year, the vast majority of them were phenomenal. I mean, there was a Custodes guy. His Custodes looked incredible. I mean, you know, full drip, gold, great edge highlights. He had the Sisters' weird transport painted up with these, like, beautifully weird volumetric metallic highlights. There was this insane Raven Guard, like, Istvan guerrilla army, the dude had done a bunch of green stuff and conversions on. Like, I saw armies last year that really inspired me to go, like, I want to do stuff. I want to keep doing this thing. And that definitely was not something I felt at Adepticon. That could just be, you know, I only saw 6 armies total that I played against. I mean, there were gorgeous armies on display. There was one guy who'd done, like, a Sons of Horus, Emperor's Children army. He'd made the, like, Istvan battlements. He had Loken and Saul Tarvitz. Like, that dude was super cool. There were people with these absolutely gorgeous, like, Mechanicum and Solar Auxilia armies. But I definitely felt like the hobby standard overall was not as high as it was.
That's interesting. That's good to hear. I mean, it's not good. It's not great news, but it's at times nice to how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think taking on board. I think it's time I talk about the one problem we had at Bill's event last week. And I say problem. There was a small, like, oh, about it. basically, the Knight player fought against a large hands list, and the Iron Hands player did not bring enough weapons with knights. It was not built that way.
Mm-hmm.
And top of turn two, the Iron Hand player gives the game up. He realizes he can't win. Presumes that he can't win.
What knights was the knight player running?
He had a Porphyron, six Armigers, and I forget what the other big one was.
There was two Questorus, a Porphyron, and So it wasn't...
Yeah, the Porphyron is...
Porphyron wasn't the issue, it was the Armigers, apparently.
Yeah, well, the issue is Armigers in general should be treated like Dreadnoughts, but they're not because all of the Dreadnought specific... all of the weapons designed to take out Dreadnoughts are specific to the Dreadnought type and not Armigers, because there was a rules oversight there. So that a lot of people that I've talked to that have played against Knights and talk about the Armigers is the issue they have with the Armigers is they're almost as good as a Contemptor, but they are much harder to kill because anything that you can use to take out a Contemptor doesn't typically have any good effect against a Knight unless it's just something generic like a Laz Cannon, in which case, even with a Contemptor, you need a whole bunch of Laz Cannons to take it down.
I actually believe that Porphyron was dealt with.
I will honestly admit I was checking in with games, but the only game that I had close, I know what's going on in this one, was in the first round, the same Knight player played against the Space Wolves, and it literally came down to the last roll of the last die of the game, and the only thing left on the board was the Whirlwind Scorpius for the Space Wolves. Everything else was off the table on both sides, and the Scorpius couldn't score the objective, so the game was a draw.
Those games were awesome.
Oh, yeah, and there was a lot of good games like that, which was an anomaly when we had that pair up, and then it was like, oh. But I think talking to both players, there wasn't really any hard feelings. I think there was immediately after the game, but by the time we'd got to the end of the day, things had got better. The real problem was I don't think they started the game with adequate communication. I don't think the Iron Hands player quite knew what he was walking into. He got a bit gotcha'd by the Armigers.
And I think that's really the biggest issue that a lot of people have is when they run into a gotcha game. I will admit, part of the reason why I got out of 40K is because the entire stratagem system is built around a whole bunch of gotcha.
And not to put words in your mouth, Manji, it kind of feels that the team situation was a bit of a gotcha situation. Like, oh, I didn't realize you were Custodes. Oh, I didn't realize you had the Ancients.
I hesitate to go there. I think, you know, obviously I wish there was more communication about like what listed people have, but you have, you know, whatever, 2.5 hours or 3 hours to get a game in. You can't spend like 40 minutes going over lists, right? You can't like, you don't have time to be like, okay, who's got like a list that would be a fun matchup? You do, but then there's like 7 people that want to fight that guy, right? You just don't have the time to sort it out. You've got 5-10 minutes because you're every second you spend trying to figure out what's in a list and if it'll be a good game is eating into that clock, is eating into your ability to like play the game.
It just feels to me that that's the part of the community where we're struggling. Whenever we've hit a negative point today, it's always been something related to communication, whether it goes back to your original point near the start with, you know, there are the hidden rules of our community, what you put in a list, what you don't put in a list, like, and they aren't written down anywhere.
Like the for example, the one dreadnought per 1,000 points thing is a popular point of discussion, but like if you're not on like certain Facebook groups, you know, like it's not a super widely talked about thing.
Well, the issue is that the unspoken rule in the Heresy community, and this one is unspoken but fairly well spread around no matter where you go around in the community, is when building a list, don't be a dick. The problem is well, what is it, what might be a not a dick list to me might be a huge friggin' dick list to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a still balkanized enough with our communities that we don't no easy way to communicate, and there's not going to be. I mean, I've got plenty of friends who aren't on Facebook.
I would disagree. Like, I think if you're going to an event and you have like, let's talk about going to an event. You somehow have registered for the event. Maybe on event registration, there's a message that says, you know, here's where to go to get the event pack, or here's list requirement, or here's what we're looking for. Or maybe you go and register the event, and the TO gets a bunch of emails or whatever contacts, right? And then he goes to those emails and says, here's the event pack. you know, we'll see you on the day. And the event pack says, you know, no name characters. Or the event pack says, I heard about this as a thing in the UK. They're doing a thing where all loyalists must take 500 points of custodes, and all traitors must take 500 points of, like, that's in the event pack. And if you don't want to do it, you don't got to do it. I think communicating stuff like that early and often, and keeping people like in the loop as to like what you're trying to go for, is really critical. I think if, you know, one of my pet peeves, I can say this because we've talked about it on the Bell of Lost Souls show. I am really annoyed by narrative events that don't have a story. You know, there's nothing in the sign up to let me know like what I'm fighting for, or why my guys are there, or what we're doing. And there's no storytelling stuff happening in the game. It's not a narrative event. It's just a tournament. You didn't want to call it a tournament. I feel like, you know, Will, what you were describing, where you've got like these cool remembrancer points, and you've got like effects that persist mission to mission, and how people perform in one mission affects another. Like, to me, obviously that's a ton of work on your end, but that's a narrative event. Like, that there's story and there's stuff going on, and I'm doing stuff that is more than just open up the rule book, pick a mission and go, right?
You can just open up a mission and go, but there just has to be something else.
So we did from the book missions at the GW Open in Chicago, but during the mission, like every player, the TO would go around and at the start of the game would tell them what their objective was that game. So like I was playing Raven Guard, so most commonly I would have to like find a building or a point on the map, and I would be recovering the gene seeds. So I'd have to send like tactical squads or recon squads to like hold that building for two or three turns to score my like narrative. And that's cool, right? Because even though it's a book mission, I'm getting to do something that's like sort of fun and fluffy, more than just like, all right, I guess my snipers shoot your artificer armor sergeant, and then your guys are pinned.
And adding that narrative element can be relatively simple, in that some of the missions that I've run before, or for events before, is it's book missions, but in the midst of the book missions, you're also going to have a separate narrative objective. So you go in and you go, all right, roll up your mission, roll up table and everything, and then I'm going to wander around and randomly pick some narrative thing out of a list of narratives that I have and drop it off and go, okay, well, in addition to this battle that you've going on, there's also this overarching story that's going on that this needs to get done too.
I just, to an earlier point that you made, Manji, and I bring it up as we get towards the close, I think it's really important for the Heresy community at some point for us to lose this dislike of the word torn. I think there is something to be said for allowing players to cut loose and play competitive.
The issue herein is that tournament implies competitive, narrative implies a story, but what a lot of Heresy players want to play is something in between, where it's not a cutthroat tournament style gameplay, but it's not a complex narrative thing. It's just playing some basic missions out of the book and having fun. And while this is a concept that the community understands, there's not really a term for it in the hobby that we can use. So a lot of games get called narrative when they're not really narrative. They're just simply casual events.
I would agree dead on with that, Will. And I would also say, to your point about Martin, about like letting people cut loose, there is this wonderful woman in my local scene who loves dreadnoughts. She was so excited for plastic contemptors and plastic leviathans and all that stuff. And she wants to build Fury of the Ancients, because in first edition, you know, obviously that wasn't a very big deal. But, you know, she's getting all these dreadnoughts, and then, oh, it comes out that all the dreadnoughts are super good and people really don't want to fight the all dreadnought army. She gets really sad because she was going to do this big Imperial Fist dreadnought army, because that's the army she was super into. But now, even though she's modeled it and built it and painted it, she's played it zero times because nobody wants to fight the all dreadnought army.
I've got an Iron Hands dreadnought army, Fury of the Ancient army, sitting over, like I'm looking at it right now. And I haven't played it in Heresy 2.0 because of that. I got into Iron Hands because I like robots. And now I've got, like I said, I've got a great Fury list. It looks cool. I mean, I did a lot of work on it and everything. And, you know, it got its butt kicked quite a bit in the last edition. But in this edition,
Yep.
I just haven't played it. Now, part of that is also for the fact that about the time second edition was dropping, I was already looking at, hey, I want to do a new project. So I wanted to do something new. And I chose Space Wolves because my first army in third edition was Space Wolves. But yeah, I mean, I don't play my Iron Hands because really, oh, Iron Hands are way too powerful. And I'm like, well, I've got a Pride list and I've got a Fury list, and nobody wants to play either one of those when they're Iron Hands and you can't shoot them.
That's the thing where I feel like if I see like, here's a Heresy tournament or Heresy, and I know, oh, I should expect like Fury of the Angels. I should expect, you know, Stone Gauntlet. If I sign up for that, then at least I know that's what I'm, you know, signing up for. And I think, you know, the issue we really run into is when you aren't prepared for those lists, like the Imperial Knight guy and the guy who fought him, when you aren't prepared for those lists, that's when the bad feeling happens. That's when, you know, someone has a bad time. And I think as the big thing that we can improve upon as both people who run Heresy events, people who play in Heresy events, is, you know, making that circumstance, that moment of, oh shit, I can't do anything. Like, whatever we can do to like make that go away, I think is going to be huge progress.
Yeah, no, I total agreement. Do we really think, there we go. Do we think that at some point we're going to have some form of like standard community rules written down, or is that going to be too heretical for Heresy?
I don't know that we're going to do that, but I do think that event organizers are going to be more specific about their rules. Like for this event that I ran, because we've had some issues with turnout in a bit, I really wanted to encourage as many people as I could to come. So I wasn't putting list restrictions on like I might in the past. And at big events, I fully expect, you know, if I go to Adepticon or I go to Warzone Houston or I go to Gen Con or I do any one of these, I fully expect there to be some type of list restrictions. That's just an expectation at a big event. And I think we need to be clear on those. And one thing I'll say is, you know, I listened to Alex's discussion on a couple of different podcasts that he came on when he was recapping Adepticon. And that was one thing, is where he wanted to have these strict rules that did exclude certain types of armies like Armored Spearhead and Knights, because they did not fit with his narrative. And he really worked his butt off to try and find a way to create a way for those players, because they had a lot of players, oh no, I want to bring this list and I want to bring my Knights, or I want to bring Armored Spearhead. And so he found a way to try and work that in where they were in their own separate category and fighting their own separate missions, so that they wouldn't be paired off against people who couldn't deal with them. And then none of these people that forced him to make this change really showed up. He had like one Armored Spearhead and one Knight player, and he didn't want to force them to play each other all day, all week, all weekend. So he brought them into the regular game, and now the guy that was playing Knights feels really bad because his list was designed to go against other Knights, and it's just chewing everything up. And so, you know, if we are going to set restrictions in order to set the expectation for the type of armies that you're going to run, I think you really need to also consider if it's a two-way street. If we're doing this to improve the player experience, players shouldn't expect that EOs are going to then change everything to let your army be the exception, because then it's going to just ruin the experience for everyone, including the EO who put all the work into it.
And I think you're bang on, Will. I think, you know, there needs to be work between both, not just the TOs, because the TOs can only do so much, but like players do have to come up and be like ready. You know, when I brought my Armored Spearhead list, I had like three versions of the list I could play. And I decided to run a version that had no scoring units at all, because I just wanted to play the game and push my tanks around. And I lost every game I played badly. But my opponents were great. It was a fun time. You know, I fought an Iron Warriors player, got to have his Iron Havocs like open up and blow up a bunch of tanks. And I fought a guy who thought he, you know, couldn't do anything to touch the army, and he blows up my Fel Blade, and he blows up a Predator squadron, and he has a great time. Like, I feel like, you know, as a player, you've got to be able to work with a TO, and if they're like, yeah, man, I really can't do a Knights list, or I really can't do, you know, an Armored Spearhead list, like, play something else, you know, or don't go, right? Like, that's the...
And I will actually tag on to that, because, you know, you said you had a couple of different lists you can read. That might be something that as a community we should be encouraging people to do, because I know it's not the easiest thing to travel with an army. Trust me. Don't get me started on my trip to Vancouver and what became of my Raptor.
Oh, no.
So let's just put it this way. My Raptor left Texas in one piece and arrived in Canada in 20 pieces, along with a whole bunch of my other stuff that it fell onto during the time. And I spent 4 hours the Friday before the event putting my entire army back together, because my Fire Raptor had decided to just roll around and destroy everything. But, you know, so like I said, I know that it can be hard to travel with an army. But one of the things that I do is I like Lehman Ross. He's a great looking model. But not everybody has a Primarch, and not everybody can deal with a Primarch, and not everybody wants to play against a Primarch. So when I run my lists, if I'm running my standard Howl of the Death Wolf list, is what the list is called that I run, that has a bunch of stuff in it centered around Morkai, Russ is in there. But if you can't deal with Russ, I've got a Kratos that I can swap out for that. And I've also got, you know, another two units that I can swap out for the Kratos, because not everybody wants to play against Kratos, because it's not as good as a Contemptor, and it's not as good as a Primarch, but it's still a little bit over good. So I've got a couple of different units that I can swap in for that, for people that want, you know, don't necessarily want to deal with a Primarch or Kratos.
I really like the idea of everyone showing up to an event with two lists. It deals with one of my concerns that I see happening on Discords all the time, which is where someone will have a game and they will run into a tough unit, and then there will be a conversation about how do they deal with that particular problem. And though best meant with full intentions, what has a tendency to happen is that over time, like, everyone starts being optimized to deal with certain ideas, and then the optimization unit then becomes the target everyone wants to optimize against. Giving people flexibility to take this list or this list, it actually puts a dampener on that meta role, because you can always have the, well, this is the list with this thing, this is the list with the other thing, and I show up and me and my opponent look at our list and go, we're going to have a bad game with our primary lists. Here we go, we can do this instead. It's an escape valve for that competitiveness that we all have.
Mm-hmm. I think the sideboard idea has some merit. I think that makes traveling very difficult, as Heresy armies are already pretty big, you know, I'll hard to fly with.
The trick, I think, is doing as Will said, it's not saying, oh, my entire army is different, here's one or two. Can we swap out, you know, between 300 to 400 points to make it a different army?
Yeah, I mean, as my example, literally throwing one Kratos in with the rest of my 3,000 point army, so that, you know, if you're, oh, I don't want to play against Russ, okay, well, I'll swap him out for Kratos. Or in the example of my Pride list, where I've got him, I can drop Russ, and by dropping Russ, I can swap in another unit of Terminators and a Warmonger to deliver him, because I don't have enough space to put in another Land Raider for them to ride in. You know, okay, so first of all, six more models isn't a real deal breaker on travel. It will make a big difference to somebody who is not prepared to deal with a Primarch, but is okay with playing against a Pride list.
And like I said, I think it's something that event organizers are going to have to play with, and hopefully the community will move in that direction or not.
Well, and I also think as soon as somebody cracks the code or finds a thing that works, like, more events will definitely adopt it. Like, that happened with Centurion in 1.0, and I think, you know, there is going to be something similar coming.
And I think that could be summed up as one of the things we are missing. We are missing that Centurion-like format. I know there's been attempts to create it, and I think early attempts to create it have soured the well a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, what we're going to end up on as to where Heresy 2 is not going to be where Heresy, you know, 6 or 7.
Okay, well, I think we've been going for quite a while, so I want to say huge thanks to both of you for hanging out tonight. I've had...
Yeah, thanks for the invite, man.
No, I absolutely... thanks so much for having me on. And I think this was a very productive conversation. I'd love to see people listen to this and bring this conversation into the community as a whole.
Absolutely, yeah.
Huge thanks again to Manju and Will for that. We had a fantastic conversation there. I really enjoyed sitting there and digging deep into some of those subjects.
and I hope you enjoyed it too. If you have feedback and things you want to add to the conversation, please feel free to email me at firesofbetrayal@gmail.com or reach out to me through Twitter or Facebook or wherever you see me around. I'm more than happy to engage in this conversation a step further. And if you want, I'm more than welcome for you to come on the show. And if you've got a particular passion or point you want to talk about, come and say your piece. This show is meant to be a bit of a talk show at times. I'm more than happy to have members of the community come on and talk to me about ideas they're feeling very passionate about. But with that said, I'm going to leave you for today. It's been a very long show. Thank you to Lucas for coming on earlier to talk about his event that I'm going to be attending next month. And I will see you all in 2 weeks.
Please subscribe to the podcast on your podcatcher of choice. And we will see you in 2 weeks. If you have any questions for the show, please email us at firesofbetrayal@gmail.com or reach out through our social media accounts or at yourself to their respective owners. Until next time, we wish you all good fortune.